Вариант 6.
Сейчас вы будете выполнять задание по аудированию. Каждый текст прозвучит два раза. После первого и второго прослушивания у вас будет время для выполнения и проверки заданий. Все паузы включены в аудиозапись. Остановка и повторное воспроизведение аудиозаписи не предусмотрены. По окончании выполнения всего раздела «Аудирование» перенесите свои ответы в бланк ответов номер 1. Задание 1. Вы услышите 6 высказываний. Установите соответствие между высказываниями каждого говорящего «AF» и утверждениями, данными в списке 1-7. Используйте каждое утверждение, обозначенное соответствующей цифрой, только один раз. В задании есть одно лишнее утверждение. Вы услышите запись дважды. Занесите свои ответы в таблицу. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданием.
Now we are ready to start. Speaker A.
Mrs. Tyson was my piano teacher from when I started school at the age of 5, and she taught me right through till my last day of high school. She was an inspiration, and she made the piano one of my biggest passions. I also remember Mr. Suttle, who was my science teacher for the last 3 years of high school. He made the subject come alive for us and was an inspiration to everyone. I can't remember any bad teachers at school. Perhaps there were a few, if any of them. Luckily, I was taught by really talented teachers.
Speaker B.
My favourite teacher was Mr. Bonnock, who really got me into reading. At first, he scared me a bit, but then I must say I learned a great deal with him. He was one of those people who I'd sit down and talk to just about the stuff going on in life. In class, I was a student and he was a teacher. Out of class, we were just two people sharing opinions. We disagreed in so many things, but he had a way to make me see him as a great person. He taught me that it's okay to express my opinion. It's not that I hadn't done it before, but I was scared to do it at school.
Speaker C.
My least favourite teacher at school was Mrs. Lampark. I had her back in the 11th grade for English. Actually, she wasn't a bad teacher. She never shouted at us, although she was strict enough and never let us get away with incomplete homework. What annoyed me most of all, however, was that she used to talk to the students like we were children. She seemed to think none of us understood anything. It was so demeaning talking to her. I think she would have been much better at teaching third or fourth graders.
Speaker D.
I loved all my teachers, even those who were not really knowledgeable or inspiring. But my favourite one was Miss Brady, my English teacher. She was Australian and had the best accent ever, because it was like an English accent with a tinge of Aussie. It was really fascinating. My mates and I used to spend enough of our English lessons in a state of wonder. It's funny how my mum once said that my English was improving when she was my teacher, and then when she met her at school, she understood why.
Speaker E.
The teacher that made an impact on me was Mr. Peachy. He was my head of year in upper school and my history teacher. He only had one eye and he used to scare the hell out of me when I first started to study his subject. But he was sound in the end and actually gave me more chances than I deserved. I used to skip school a lot, play football, and he ended up sorting it out and helped me through it all so I could get time off to play. I was quite naughty, but he liked me for some reason.
Speaker F.
I hated American history. Our teacher gave us a huge list of vocabulary we had to learn by heart, and I couldn't find those words even in the book he gave us. They were all in the book at school that only he had a copy of. It was so mind-numbing. Then for 2 weeks, he usually ranted about the dull notes he gave us without even talking about things that were going to be in the test. He also gave us a weekly assignment to read a long article and to write about it. I had a C in that class, and it was my lowest grade.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now you will hear the texts again. Speaker A.
Mrs. Tyson was my piano teacher from when I started school at the age of 5, and she taught me right through till my last day of high school. She was an inspiration, and she made the piano one of my biggest passions. I also remember Mr. Suttle, who was my science teacher for the last 3 years of high school. He made the subject come alive for us and was an inspiration to everyone. I can't remember any bad teachers at school. Perhaps there were a few, if any of them. Luckily, I was taught by really talented teachers.
Speaker B.
My favourite teacher was Mr. Bonnock, who really got me into reading. At first, he scared me a bit, but then I must say I learned a great deal with him. He was one of those people who I'd sit down and talk to just about the stuff going on in life. In class, I was a student and he was a teacher. Out of class, we were just two people sharing opinions. We disagreed in so many things, but he had a way to make me see him as a great person. He taught me that it's okay to express my opinion. It's not that I hadn't done it before, but I was scared to do it at school.
Speaker C.
My least favourite teacher at school was Mrs. Lampark. I had her back in the 11th grade for English. Actually, she wasn't a bad teacher. She never shouted at us, although she was strict enough and never let us get away with incomplete homework. What annoyed me most of all, however, was that she used to talk to the students like we were children. She seemed to think none of us understood anything. It was so demeaning talking to her. I think she would have been much better at teaching third or fourth graders.
Speaker D.
I loved all my teachers, even those who were not really knowledgeable or inspiring. But my favourite one was Miss Brady, my English teacher. She was Australian and had the best accent ever, because it was like an English accent with a tinge of Aussie. It was really fascinating. My mates and I used to spend enough of our English lessons in a state of wonder. It's funny how my mum once said that my English was improving when she was my teacher, and then when she met her at school, she understood why.
Speaker E.
The teacher that made an impact on me was Mr. Peachy. He was my head of year in upper school and my history teacher. He only had one eye and he used to scare the hell out of me when I first started to study his subject. But he was sound in the end and actually gave me more chances than I deserved. I used to skip school a lot, play football, and he ended up sorting it out and helped me through it all so I could get time off to play. I was quite naughty, but he liked me for some reason.
Speaker F.
I hated American history. Our teacher gave us a huge list of vocabulary we had to learn by heart, and I couldn't find those words even in the book he gave us. They were all in the book at school that only he had a copy of. It was so mind-numbing. Then for 2 weeks, he usually ranted about the dull notes he gave us without even talking about things that were going to be in the test. He also gave us a weekly assignment to read a long article and to write about it. I had a C in that class, and it was my lowest grade.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers.
Задание 2. Вы услышите диалог. Определите, какие из приведенных утверждений AG соответствуют содержанию текста. 1. True. Какие не соответствуют? 2. False. и о чем в тексте не сказано, то есть на основании текста нельзя дать ни положительного, ни отрицательного ответа. 3. Not stated. Занесите номер выбранного вами варианта ответа в таблицу. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданиями.
Now we are ready to start.
When the last Harry Potter film hit theaters, lots of fans were forced to say goodbye to a story that had become a large part of their lives. Rupert Grint, who has played Potter's best friend Ronnie Weasley in all the 8 films, is still coming to terms with ending that chapter of his life. Today he is here to discuss what it was like to part ways with the J.K. Rowling world. Hello, Mr. Grint, and welcome to the show.
It's really nice being here.
Mr. Grint, what are you doing at the moment?
It's a bit strange being called Mr. Grint. Anyway, tomorrow I'm going to Norway to take part in a new film, Comrade. Now that my work in Harry Potter is over, I can try something different.
I suppose it was difficult to get used to the thought that it's all over. What were those last days on set like?
Harry Potter was such a massive part of my life that I can't really remember my life before it. Our last days were very emotional. There was a real sadness about it and quite an empty feeling. I remember packing up my room, boxing everything up, and finding toys from the time when I was 10. It was weird.
Did you like that they split the last book into 2 films?
I think that it was a good idea, and they're 2 very different films. Part 2 is based on action, and it's kind of an epic. There was a lot of pressure on us to really go out with a bang.
In the last part, Hogwarts comes under attack. What was it like seeing those sets getting torn apart?
That was quite strange watching this place so familiar to us that it's almost like a second home. They were happening simultaneously, the film ending and the sets being destroyed. I was struck the first time I saw the Great Hall become a big pile of burning rubble.
Did you enjoy being in more of an action film and doing bigger stunts?
It was quite cool to film that. There was a lot of running, which is not something I'm really that used to. There are big action shots of me running across a courtyard with giants swinging stuff at us and spiders. I loved all the stunts, and luckily, I didn't really have any injuries.
If J.K. Rowling ends up writing another book, will that be something you would sign up for?
I'm not sure. I wouldn't actually completely rule it out. I was always a big fan of the books, and over the years I've become quite attached to Ron, and we've meshed into the same person, really. But I don't know how it would really work. Yet, I would like to play the middle-aged Ron. We'll have to wait and see.
How do you feel about the future?
It's good. We had a good time, but I'm looking forward to moving on.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now, you will hear the text again.
When the last Harry Potter film hit theatres, lots of fans were forced to say goodbye to a story that had become a large part of their lives. Rupert Grint, who has played Potter's best friend Ronnie Weasley in all the 8 films, is still coming to terms with ending that chapter of his life. Today he is here to discuss what it was like to part ways with the J.K. Rowling world. Hello, Mr. Grint, and welcome to the show.
It's really nice being here.
Mr. Grint, what are you doing at the moment?
It's a bit strange being called Mr. Grint. Anyway, tomorrow I'm going to Norway to take part in a new film, Comrade. Now that my work in Harry Potter is over, I can try something different.
I suppose it was difficult to get used to the thought that it's all over. What were those last days on set like?
Harry Potter was such a massive part of my life that I can't really remember my life before it. Our last days were very emotional. There was a real sadness about it and quite an empty feeling. I remember packing up my room, boxing everything up, and finding toys from the time when I was 10. It was weird.
Did you like that they split the last book into two films?
I think that it was a good idea, and they're two very different films. Part two is based on action, and it's kind of an epic. There was a lot of pressure on us to really go out with a bang.
In the last part, Hogwarts comes under attack. What was it like seeing those sets getting torn apart?
That was quite strange, watching this place so familiar to us, that it's almost like a second home. They were happening simultaneously, the film ending and the sets being destroyed. I was struck the first time I saw the Great Hall become a big pile of burning rubble.
Did you enjoy being in more of an action film and doing bigger stunts?
It was quite cool to film that. There was a lot of running, which is not something I'm really that used to. There are big action shots of me running across a courtyard with giants swinging stuff at us and spiders. I loved all the stunts, and luckily, I didn't really have any injuries.
If J.K. Rowling ends up writing another book, will that be something you would sign up for?
I'm not sure. I wouldn't actually completely rule it out. I was always a big fan of the books, and over the years I've become quite attached to Ron, and we've meshed into the same person, really. But I don't know how it would really work. Yet, I would like to play the middle-aged Ron. We'll have to wait and see.
How do you feel about the future?
It's good. We had a good time. But I'm looking forward to moving on.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers.
Задание 3.9. Вы услышите интервью с автором детективных романов. В заданиях 3.9 запишите в поле ответа цифру 1, 2 или 3, соответствующую выбранному вами варианту ответа. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 50 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданиями.
Now we are ready to start.
Mr. Duffy, when did you first realise you wanted to write a detective novel?
When I was at college. I had a go at literary fiction, but it never worked out because I just didn't have a subject I cared about. Then, when I turned 41, a friend of mine gave me a detective novel and I started reading crime fiction. I found I was gripped. Something in the person I am responded to these books. And I thought to myself, why not give it a go? However, it wasn't until 2009 that I published my first novel.
What especially attracts you in crime fiction?
I love the intensity in the work of Michael Connelly. For instance, he is such a clever writer. I was hooked by Connelly's character, Harry Bosch, because he's a policeman with a sense of vocation. I know a number of policemen like that, and I think that passion for your work is something male readers in particular respond to. There are a lot of men who wish their job was just as all-consuming and fulfilling as fighting crime.
How long does it take you to write a novel?
Usually about 9 months in total. I have two stages. The first is the coffee shop stage, where I sit down, order a coffee, make notes and plan. I do that for weeks before starting to write. The second is sitting upstairs alone and writing intensely. It blocks out the rest of the world and allows me to focus.
We've read a huge number of Australian detective novels to make our choices for select editions, and The Tower impressed us with its authentic plot and setting. How did you create this strong sense of place?
I tried to do it through the narrative voice, and it was quite a challenge. In my experience, Australian police are fairly laconic on the job, and when they're talking about what they do. They're rather dry and pragmatic, If I'd internalized their voices in the book, it wouldn't have worked. It would have been too dull. So I had to create a new voice for the book that was Australian but compressed.
Your next novel's also about Nicholas Troy, isn't it?
Yes. The Tower is the first in a series of crime novels about Sydney. I call it the City of Sharks. The sunlit surface is bright and glittering, but predators swim just beneath it, ready to snatch something on the surface they like the look of. This is a beautiful place, but it can be a hard one because of crime. In The Simple Death, a man falls off a ferry and dies, and an elderly lady dies after a long painful illness. Could these two deaths be linked? It is this investigation that occupies Troy's time, but he is also being troubled by a few other events in his life. He thinks a lot about the choices he makes in his work and his life, and tries to do his best. The novel is a sophisticated but hugely entertaining mystery, with a plot ripped straight out of tomorrow's headlines.
Has writing about crime disillusioned you at all, or made you cynical over the years?
Writing about real-life crime can be depressing, because you have to focus on the criminal aspects. But I'm never depressed when I'm writing a crime novel, because I'm engaged with the story, and it's really captivating. As readers, we don't expect realism from detective fiction. We're interested in the battle between good and bad. Some of the most important stuff in the life of the characters is actually arguments with their superiors and problems with their day-to-day work. There's a specific structure in a detective novel that we expect to find, just as we do in a symphony or other classic works of art. And it's satisfying. Although nobody expects detective novels to end happily, we always find out who has committed a crime, whereas in real life, unfortunately, we often don't.
Are there any more cases for Nicholas Troy to solve?
Of course there are. I'm currently working on a new novel, and I have no plans to stop writing.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now, you will hear the text again.
Mr. Duffy, when did you first realise you wanted to write a detective novel?
When I was at college. I had a go at literary fiction, but it never worked out, because I just didn't have a subject I cared about. Then, when I turned 41, a friend of mine gave me a detective novel, and I started reading crime fiction. I found I was gripped. Something in the person I am responded to these books. And I thought to myself, why not give it a go? However, it wasn't until 2009 that I published my first novel.
What especially attracts you in crime fiction?
I love the intensity in the work of Michael Connelly. For instance, he is such a clever writer. I was hooked by Connelly's character, Harry Bosch, because he's a policeman with a sense of vocation. I know a number of policemen like that, and I think that passion for your work is something male readers in particular respond to. There are a lot of men who wish their job was just as all-consuming and fulfilling as fighting crime.
How long does it take you to write a novel?
Usually about 9 months in total. I have two stages. The first is the coffee shop stage, where I sit down, order a coffee, make notes and plan. I do that for weeks before starting to write. The second is sitting upstairs alone and writing intensely. It blocks out the rest of the world and allows me to focus.
We've read a huge number of Australian detective novels to make our choices for select editions, and The Tower impressed us with its authentic plot and setting. How did you create this strong sense of place?
I tried to do it through the narrative voice, and it was quite a challenge. In my experience, Australian police are fairly laconic on the job, and when they're talking about what they do. They're rather dry and pragmatic. If I'd internalised their voices in the book, it wouldn't have worked. It would have been too dull, so I had to create a new voice for the book that was Australian but compressed.
Your next novel's also about Nicholas Troy, isn't it?
Yes, The Tower is the first in a series of crime novels about Sydney. I call it The City of Sharks. The sunlit surface is bright and glittering, but predators swim just beneath it, ready to snatch something on the surface they like the look of. This is a beautiful place, but it can be a hard one because of crime. In The Simple Death, a man falls off a ferry and dies, and an elderly lady dies after a long painful illness. Could these two deaths be linked? It is this investigation that occupies Troy's time, But he is also being troubled by a few other events in his life. He thinks a lot about the choices he makes in his work and his life, and tries to do his best. The novel is a sophisticated but hugely entertaining mystery, with a plot ripped straight out of tomorrow's headlines.
Has writing about crime disillusioned you at all, or made you cynical over the years?
Writing about real-life crime can be depressing, because you have to focus on the criminal aspects. But I'm never depressed when I'm writing a crime novel, because I'm engaged with the story, and it's really captivating. As readers, we don't expect realism from detective fiction, or are interested in the battle between good and bad. Some of the most important stuff in the life of the characters is actually arguments with their superiors, and problems with their day-to-day work. There's a specific structure in a detective novel that we expect to find, just as we do in a symphony or other classic works of art. And it's satisfying. Although nobody expects detective novels to end happily, we always find out who has committed a crime, whereas in real life, unfortunately, we often don't.
Are there any more cases for Nicholas Troy to solve?
Of course there are. I'm currently working on a new novel, and I have no plans to stop writing.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test.
Время, отведенное на выполнение заданий, истекло.